Travis.
I'd like to tell you a little story. It centers on two men. One of them is named Ernst von Roth, and the other one is named Herschel Grinzipan.
Okay.
Ernst von Roth was a diplomat. He worked at the German embassy in Paris, France. And Herschel Grinzipan was a resident of France at the time, but he had family that lived in Hanover, Germany. Unfortunately, by 1938, his family, who were Polish Jews, were being exiled from Germany. That was a decree from Germany. Polish Jews had to leave. And he wrote to his family a lot. They wrote to each other. So he heard about this, and his family was concerned, asking him for financial help, because they didn't know where they were going to live, how they were going to sustain themselves next. So one day, on November 7th of 1938, Herschel Grinzipan goes to the German embassy and asks to speak to a diplomat. He makes an appointment with Ernst von Roth. Ernst von Roth was the diplomat who was able to see him.
Right.
Herschel Grinzipan plugged 5 bullets into von Roth's chest. Word reached back to Germany that not only one of their diplomats in another country was assassinated, but that he was assassinated by a Jew. The leadership, which we all know who was in charge, some guy you might have heard of by the name of Adolf Hitler, as well as his lead propagandist, Joseph Goebbels, they vowed revenge. They vowed scapegoating. 2 nights later, with the assistance of government agencies in Germany, like the SA, the SS, and the Hitler Youth, mobs all over the country attacked every building with a public Jewish association they could think of. Synagogues, shops, delis, cemeteries.
Yeah, the Night of Broken Glass.
Yes, or as it was called, or as they would say in German, Kristallnacht. According to what I found on Wikipedia, at least 90 people were murdered that night. A lot of historians would consider this to be the start of the Holocaust. Of course, I could argue that the Holocaust started once Hitler came to power 5 years earlier. But considering that as the start of the Holocaust, that got me thinking a lot, because Germany would surrender 6.5 years later. So 6 million people, and we're just talking the conservative estimates of the Jewish and Roma populations in Europe, 6 million people murdered in just 6.5 years.
Million a year, yeah.
You know, when we're taught that in public school, we mainly fixate on the number, the 6 million number. We go, oh, well, I guess that's a big number. And I say I guess because they didn't really teach us about other atrocities in such detail, no less, that happened before or since. So we really didn't have a lot to compare about. This is why people get into that trap of saying, well, isn't Stalin worse because he killed more people? No, it wasn't really genocide. That was just purging perceived political dissidents.
Plus, he had a lot of fun with captured Nazis himself, actually.
Yeah. And also, what was his death toll? 13 million? That was like over the course of a few decades. We're talking 6 million in 6.5 years. You don't really get the sense in public school that, Jesus Christ, that's fast. That is like
assembly line.
They literally created, I mean, that is literally a killing machine. The
assembly line.
Yeah. And the fact that I mean, even now when you hear of atrocities happening today and since then, it's like it's never that quickly. And it's never like, hey, we literally created a facility just to facilitate death as efficiently as possible. But the Nazis did that. Like that is why they teach the Holocaust so much. And I still think they do it insufficiently in public schools. But that's why it's emphasized so much. It's not so much how many were killed. It's the speed and the manner in which they did it.
Well, we know too, the reason why they invented those camps and structures and buildings is because they noticed that digging lots of graves and using a bullet not only took too much time, but it had an effect on the men. So to make it easier, just stuff them in a room where you can't see with no windows, press a button, and just clean out the.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they really they were that evil.
They're efficient.
The epilogue to the story is that, you know, obviously Ernst von Roth is dead and his body was parroted like a martyr. We're going to use this guy to initiate the cleansing that we want. As for Herschel Grinzipan, his fate is unknown. It's likely he did not survive through the war. Obviously, he was in custody and likely under the custody of Nazi Germany, whether it be the SS or just the general German forces. But there is no documentation of his death. There is nothing to confirm that he's dead. There was no remains that were found that were attributed to him. The reason why it's largely believed that he was dead is because his family, who thankfully survived the Holocaust and they moved to Israel in 1948, they noticed their son never wrote to them. Even though that was something their son was really good at. Their son was constantly communicating with the family. But they never heard from him, so they assumed he's dead. And officially, thanks to many years later, the family arranged their home German town of Hanover, their former hometown, I guess. They asked the city to have him officially declared dead in absentia. And his death is marked officially as May 8th, 1945, the day Germany surrendered. I bring this sad little history lesson up, because I feel like we just had our own Ernst von Roth, except instead of an American diplomat, it was a propagandist and political activist who was an ally of the current administration. Instead of a Jewish man, it was a young Mormon man, seemingly motivated to do what he did by just being too into memes, I guess.
Yeah, a Discord, basically.
Just being irony-pilled on the internet. And the scapegoat is not Jewish people, for now. It's trans people. Even though a trans person had nothing to do, no trans person had anything to do with the murder of Charlie Kirk, the aforementioned propagandist, but they're trying to make it that anyway. And in fairness, we haven't, at least not at the speed that Kristallnacht happened, we haven't had this like nationwide riot where, you know, queer establishments were attacked left and right. And we haven't had that, but we've had little smatterings. In Arizona, I heard there was a man who was arrested in a foiled plot to shoot up a nightclub because he told the police he wanted to be a martyr for Charlie Kirk. Here in Long Beach, our Long Beach Pride Center, our LGBT Pride Center building got attacked the morning of when his big memorial service in Arizona was. That morning, that Sunday morning, that building was tagged with lots of graffiti that said, basically, we hate gay people, we hate trans people, we hate all queer people. There was a swastika on there. There was something along the lines of, we love MAGA. And then that same morning, I don't know if this is connected or not, the high school that's very close to me, a couple of signs on like a gate, kind of like a gate for cars to enter, they got tagged with like a lot of, we are Charlie Kirk, we are Charlie Kirk, fuck the left, free speech. Not exactly as bigoted as what the Pride Center got, but it's still vandalism. I saw that with my own eyes because I walked by that school all the time with my dog, and I showed you those pictures. I didn't show you these pictures, but nearby there were like two electrical boxes, like kind of on the curb. I don't know if this is connected, but it said twice. It said fuck and a person's name. I'm not gonna say who the name of the person was, and I don't know if that person goes to that school or what.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if that graffiti, it was like right next to it.
So you don't know if it's related or anything.
So I wondered, like, is this a bullying tactic? I don't know. It was very uncomfortable. It was very discouraging to see that. And it made me feel less safe. I'm going to be honest. I felt less safe. And like, you know, where I live, it's not exactly like the nicest part of town. Like, I see homeless people all the time. I mean, I live very close to a freaking like rehab center. You know, I live in close proximity to people who are not well and need help. No, that made me
put on alert.
That made me genuinely feel unsafe. And thankfully, I walked by that. It's been 2 days since then. I've walked by that place. The school has gotten rid of the graffiti. They got it very, very quickly. I was happy to see that. You know, it won't be like a big all-in-one swoop like Kristallnacht was, but I wonder if it's like going to be in smatterings. Just little incidents, which I don't know. Hopefully that means maybe this will move slower, which means we'll have more time to react. But it makes me worried. I'm getting a little ahead of myself here because we're here to talk about the assassination of Charlie Kirk.
And political violence as a whole in our history.
I just want to be clear right up front. We do not support the assassination of Charlie Kirk. We weren't cheering when he died. We weren't like, hey, someone did something. We weren't like that. We did not like Charlie Kirk. We were not fans of him. There were things that his death affected our show because there were things we had to cut from the episodes that were coming out.
Out of respect for his widow, yeah.
We really
edited actually two episodes.
Two episodes,
back to back, the two that are before this one, because it was out of respect for his widow, because it's like, okay, we're going to be professional. And it's just interesting that it happened. Because interesting in the sense of like, wow, like we didn't see this happening.
And also just respect for you guys, the audience, because it was like, you know, the Gavin Newsom episode, we did briefly mention him. There was more stuff we talked about. We went on a little tangent disparaging his character. I still stand by those remarks, but it didn't. It felt like that since that episode was going to come out afterwards, it's like, this is going to seem weird that we're talking about him this way, like he's still alive. That's going to be like, oof.
Just not tasteful.
And then just things we said about in the Hope episode where like some flippant ways we talked about political violence happening in the country.
And our past of our species.
In a way that like, ooh, this doesn't.
It's not tasteful.
We would have said something different if we recorded this afterwards.
Because we record in bulk, as you know, folks, for this production of Give Us the Launch Codes. This podcast, we always record in bulk. That's just how we do it. And so that goes to show you that, going on what Travis said, no, like, this is just sad.
You know,
is just sad.
You know, I think that, despite all the things we don't like Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk was a very hateful individual. And his purpose in life was to spread that hate into others via campus outreach, and therefore making our campuses, college campuses, more unsafe for people. That like that you got like literal hate movements disguised as like, oh, we're just simply political movements that care about smaller taxes. It's like, well, no, we also think trans people shouldn't exist. Actually, you know what? I'm not even going to go into the specifics of what Charlie Kirk said because you can look that up yourself. Google is free. I'm really sick of people showing up in the comments being like, what did he say that was so bad? Of which I'm like, well, if you're asking that, I know that whatever I say, even if I share like a full unedited clip of his show or whatever, like you're going to be like, whoa, that was out of context. Or he didn't say the thing you said. Or the worst one of all, the most damning one, is he wasn't being hateful. He was just telling the truth. Of which, to quote G.I. Robot from the HBO Max show Creature Commandos,
that's what a Nazi would say.
I think more with him, looking at his career, he was just, what I say is he was very smart about how he went with it all. Very smart. People say like, oh, he went to college campuses because he really cared about that generation. And I'm like this. No. It's just weird that a 30-year-old man.
He was grooming.
Is talking to younger kids when he could have done it with his own generation. You rarely see him have a debate with an adult. And if he did, I know there's some, it's like you're on a stadium and the person's like how many feet away? Not as close and as intimate as these college debates. But he's also said numerous times, even at the college debates, you can find it. Like you said, it's all available. He has said, I'm not here. People always have been saying for him, well, he was conversing. He was debating. He has said multiple times, I'm here to teach you. That's not conversing.
Yeah. First of all, you should know, if he was really interested in debate at college campuses, he should have been debating college professors and not students. He only debated college students because college students are young and naive.
Anyone can debate a 20-year-old.
And he was doing it on he was doing it in platforms, which was actually just him giving a talk. You know, so it's a platform that he controlled. It was about him, you know, versus like a college students in a Q&A line, of which you basically only have two minutes, and then you have to move on because you're...
Well, he controls it too. He can just say, move on. I'm done with you, move on.
Yeah, exactly. And anytime he's embarrassed... Because the stuff we always see, again, all of that is just for his YouTube channels, his social media output, where he could, and all the videos are titled, like, you know, Charlie Kirk destroys stupid leftist on transgenderism. Charlie Kirk schools college liberal on...
They're highlight reels.
Yeah, and it's like, that's not respectful. That is not someone who's interested in respectful debate. That is a bully.
Well, also too, online you can find the moments where he was put in his place. And the thing is you see, he controls it because he has told people, you're done with the mic, move on.
Yeah.
And the thing is, a real debate is where you're one-on-one with someone, not with the person you're talking to, surrounded by a bunch of people who can shout in their ear or cheer in their ear, whether it's positive or negative. That's not how a real conversation goes. When you say, people say like, well, he was conversing with people. Okay, a real conversation is two people literally at a table with food and drinks talking at this level the entire time without spectators, without security, without merchandise.
The key part of that is when, if you're actually having an honest conversation of ideas, you have to actually be open
to changing your mind.
Exactly.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's it.
No, that's exactly it. You have to be vulnerable.
And I'll say this. Yes, there are some moments when the quote-unquote dumb leftist liberal he's talking to is being a complete dumbass and jackass themselves, because it's a 20-year-old college student being talked to by a man who's almost 30.
Who thinks he's better than them.
Even he thinks better than the ones who agree with him. But the thing is, it's like, yeah, there are videos where it's like, well, what about that person who's like, well, yeah, that person's a college kid saying stupid, outlandish shit. Very few of them are calm and articulate bringing stuff up. Yeah. But watch when he talks to an adult and see how those go. Yeah, it doesn't really go well most of the time.
Or he should have been debating college professors.
Yeah, and also when he's talking to other adults, yeah, it's people who fully are in his pocket or vice versa and promoting each other, like Ben Shapiro.
Or, you know, I know he debated Kyle Kulinski at Politicon, which, I mean, it's Politicon. Like,
what? That already sounds bad.
That already sounds like everything I don't like. But, you know, I mostly like Kyle Kulinski. But, like, Kyle Kulinski is just another media figure. Like, he's just another media commentator, like Charlie Kirk was. So it wasn't like, he wasn't like talking to a professor of, like, you know, social sciences or economics.
Well, I'm surprised he never debated an off the street random 60-year-old person. Someone who lived longer than him, who has gone through it. And he never debated anyone, like never conversed or debated anyone over 40. He had talks with people because they agreed on stuff and they would be hosting events, but he never did his college debate style stuff at like a retirement home.
And the thing that irritates me about that, he's getting so much like credit, and there's a lot of whitewashing of his reputation with the whole like, he was willing to talk to people. And I'm like, he didn't invent that. Ben Shapiro was doing that 10 years ago, and Crowder, and fucking Milo Yiannopoulos, if you remember that far. It's like Charlie Kirk was just picking up where they left off. Even like Charlie Kirk having like his own talk show, that's a recent thing, but he's just doing what Ben Shapiro has been doing, and Crowder and the like. He's like, I have a radio podcast show. That's what all the cool conservatives are doing. And frankly, I've never, this sort of outpouring of love from the right, and I get it, you know, he was one of their guy. He did a lot to, like, you know, recruit younger millennial and Gen Z conservatives and whatever.
Too, he got Trump the win.
And he helped get Trump the win,
So Trump has literally said, it's because of him I'm here.
But I always found him, the amount of, and I find a lot of this is astroturfed anyway, like it's, you know, because conservative media... A lot of it's just conservative media exploiting him for political points, for audience points, for power. But which is why I have a lot of doubts of like how enthusiastic people are actually about Like, we're so, everyone's so sad that he's gone. This is the great track. And I'm like, dude, I always thought he was like one of the more mid pundits. I always thought Ben Shapiro was better at communicating his points, you know, just sort of the way he talks, the speed, that kind of nerdy nasally thing that he does. I always thought that Ben Shapiro sounded a little more authentic, but Charlie Kirk always sounded like he was, I always got like Nepo baby vibes from him, which is why when I had to look him up, I was surprised that his dad wasn't some big conservative guy, because he always had that like aura of, and maybe it's because he started this TPUSA thing when he was
18. Yeah.
With the partnership of some much older guy with a lot of money who just saw him speak at a college once, was like, hey, what if I like start this project with this kid? So like he never... You know, so I don't know. I always kind of got this, like, he's an overgrown rich kid vibe from him, and I never found him to be very charismatic.
The way he died, I think, is what actually made it more than now what it was. Yeah. Obviously, he got shot in the neck in front of 3,000 people. From what I've heard...
A lot of them had their phones out, so there's a lot of videos of it on the internet.
Oh, the wording is that's what catapulted his status. It did. Yeah. Because the thing is, because how everyone who has... who is a registered Republican and now being an outspoken Christian, because that's been a trend now, has said that he's a martyr. And in reality, a martyr is more powerful than being alive.
One of many reasons why I'm not celebrating the fact that he was murdered, because I don't like the fact that he's a murderer. I don't think he deserved that at all. And the effort to crystallize his martyrdom has just kind of made things worse in this.
His assassination, I would say, put his... cause 10 years ahead. It has. Because here's the thing you have to register. I think the ones who are in charge are definitely taking advantage of this. But the average person, it affected them. Over the past 2 weeks, church, since his death on the 10th of September, church attendance has skyrocketed. Look at that video from New Zealand. They were doing that traditional tribal chant for him. South Korea had hundreds of people holding his, you know, pictures of his face, yeah, with the words, "We are Charlie Kirk." And even, hell, I don't know if people know this, but the Sunday after his death, that big march that happened in London, a lot of people were saying it was because of him. Because he died, we pushed this harder. Even, was it Tommy Robinson, right? He said, Charlie. We are Charlie Kirk.
A march for kicking out migrants.
Specifically, I believe it's Muslims. So obviously it means stuff to people because violence, and this is what angers me with wording, and I guess this is what you get for watching a lot of George Carlin. It's just violence. Really? Oh, it's political violence. Like that one, I think it was one congressional member saying political. Oh, the governor of Ohio. Political violence is a little different. I'm like, no, violence is violence. Domestic violence, political violence, war, armed robbery, grand theft, all that stuff. It's stuff violence. Someone beating their wife to death and then shooting a well-known political figure. It's the same sadness. It is. Because the thing is, when you try to add more of like, well, this is the political violence. Gosh, we got to really watch this. I'm like, oh, God. Whenever you have to put like an asterisk basically before the main word, mm-hmm, like you're just selling something. Yeah. Because think of it like when we talked about freedom. Well, free speech. How about just freedom? Well, freedom isn't free. You know, freedom of choice, really. Oh, that's not freedom. Freedom is just one word. Violence, one word. There's no beforehand, no afterhand, no asterisk. It's just that. His death sucks for the fact that, one, a man died. Really, a man died, which is sad. People watched it. People recorded it. The same way like Killer Mike, the rapper, talked about George Floyd. We're all watching it like murder porn. That's horrible.
The George Floyd's a good example because I remember when that, like, first broke out, it was really hard to scroll away from that video. And I don't mean, like, it was captivating to watch. I mean, like, I'm like, oh, I scroll up. Nope, there it is again. There it is. Because I don't know about you. I personally don't like watching people being killed in real life. I just feel there's something, like, disrespectful about
it. Yeah, snuff films suck.
Like, I'm not a, like, you know, I get that white police officers have to do it because it's part of the investigation. But unfortunately, I did see a clip of Charlie Kirk getting hit with the bullet, and I didn't want to. It was just the first thing when I pulled up on Instagram. I was like, oh fuck! Closed out my phone right then and there. I was like, fuck! I don't want to see that.
That's how I was scrolling, and I just hit it. I'm like, whoa, what's this? That's why I texted you.
And it's like, you know, these social media companies can only react so quickly. You know, you're generally not supposed to post stuff.
But if you're flooded, you can't do anything.
Exactly.
And it was flooded.
And so I'm sure that's one reason why his death was catapulted, because it was super public. Like, everybody saw it. Even people that didn't want to see it, everybody saw it. And that's terrible. Like, just in general, like another reason why Charlie Kirk's death disturbs me is just the idea that somebody was able to get a rifle from a Discord chat, of all things. Like, somebody was able to get a hold of a rifle, a scoped rifle, plant themselves in a nearby building on a college campus, and they were able to take, it was just one shot. He just shot one bullet and killed a guy.
It was instant, too.
I mean, what would have happened if he decided to shoot other people, too? There's a whole crowd of people. I'm sure everybody in that audience was thinking, fuck, am I next? So there's something about that just felt so, like, American. And I'm sure every college student was, every person in attendance, every person present there was thinking, like, is this the next one? And it wasn't. The next one happened in Denver just a few hours later. Another very American thing. So, like, another reason why Charlie Kirk's death is sad and tragic is that the manner of which that could happen, and the fact that it was allowed to happen, and the trauma that it had on everyone involved. No one deserves that. Because what I hate this rhetoric is that if you didn't, you can't, like, what we're saying, like, all the ways in which Charlie Kirk is, his death is tragic, none of them are, we think he was a good person and his death is a loss to the world. I don't agree with that. I do think there are some people that when they die, their impact on the world is a net negative. I think that is the case with Charlie Kirk. But that doesn't mean I wanted him murdered. And that apparently is a hard time for people to understand. Some people think just that logic enough is like...
You mean a logic without emotion? Really, that's what it is. It's just thinking logically. That's what the point
is.
Yeah,
like they think that is the same as celebrating his death. They think that's the exact same thing. No, you know what I think would have been a good fate for Charlie Kirk? I would have loved to have seen him have a fall after his rise in a cordial way, whether it be a scandal that affected TPUSA that he couldn't recover from. I would have wanted him to be, or maybe there was some sort of right-wing figure that got bigger than him and made him irrelevant, or maybe we had a great pendulum swift in society that made people like him irrelevant. I would have loved to have seen him grow old to see that irrelevance happen to him, and to where you mentioned Charlie Kirk's name, maybe like how we mentioned Milo Yiannopoulos. You go like, whoa, huh, that name takes me back. Hey, remember how much of an asshole he was? I'd have loved to see that for him. And yeah, that's mean. I know that's mean. But here's the bright side of that. He could have seen his children grow up.
And he would have still had his millions.
He would have been, yeah, exactly. He would have been fine. He could have seen his children grow up. Maybe he would have been become a grandfather.
Had more kids.
The only people he would have been able to affect are the people that were actually closest to him, not the millions of Americans, some of whom are in marginalized groups that he disparaged against, who are now fearful of their lives right now because, you know, especially people in the queer community who feel like, you know, this is going to be the beginning of some sort of mass atrocity, much like Kristallnacht was. Like, they're going to use they're going to use this death, much like the Nazis did with Ernst von Rath, to carry out some atrocity against our most vulnerable.
I would love to have had him on. No, hey, I would love to have had him on the podcast for ours. No, really, really. Because our plan is to be big. We're small right now. It would have been great to have him on, because that's the point. Because anyone else going, like you said, anyone who's celebrating his death publicly, like, fuck you. You're not helping.
And who is that, by the way? Who is it, like...
It's just a string of TikTok accounts.
Yeah, is it like @Harambe420? Like I want to ask these people, who the fuck is actually celebrating his death? Is it just some random comment you saw? Because it's not.
No, there's videos. It's been on the news. But the thing is, irregardless, anyone who does that about anyone's death, you're just an asshole not helping the situation. If you celebrate openly someone's death, regardless of who they are, how you felt, what it was, you are an asshole not helping the situation. It just stokes the flame, whether it's 2 people or 2 million. That doesn't help. I remember people made, there was jokes online when Japan had that tsunami back in like the 2010s. That doesn't help. You get what I'm saying? Hell, look at what some people said with the beginning when the Israel and Palestine thing happening. It's like this. Don't make jokes. This is serious. Don't be happy. Don't hope the other side. That's what I mean. So there are videos out there. I don't know what the numbers are, millions, a thousand, a dozen. Either way, even if it's just one, you're making it worse.
But my point is like people that nobody's heard of. It's not Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's not Zohran Mamdani. It's not like mainstream liberals and leftists that are dancing on Kirk's grave. But it is people on the right. It is Republicans who are very much not calling for peace, calling this means war. The left and the right cannot coexist.
You mean what Marjorie Taylor Greene said, the peaceful divorce? I'm glad you brought that up.
The stuff Laura Loomer says.
Gutfeld was doing it too.
Yeah, even Charlie Kirk's own wife, before she said she forgave the shooter.
That first speech she did was basically,
this is going to ignite a revolution. Like,
this, my tears are a battle cry. That doesn't help, lady. Yes.
That's the language of violence.
I'm glad she changed it, though.
She changed it when she found out the shooter was a white man. That's the only reason why I think she forgave him. I think if it was a dark skinned person or if it was a queer person, she wouldn't have said that.
I gotta hope that she came to her senses and realized that she holds more power emotionally right now. I'm hoping it's that, because you gotta have hope. And the thing about the war rhetoric, I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to talk about that. He dies on a Wednesday, and the following week, we're hearing stuff about we can't do this anymore. We're done. We're done with you. Like, we're done with one side. The Republicans, a lot of outspoken ones are saying we are done now living and coexisting with the left. And the problem with that is there is only one way to then solve that answer. Exactly. And the thing is, not only was it Marjorie Taylor Greene who started off this peaceful divorce, by the way, as we know with every real marriage, there's no such thing as a peaceful divorce. Because guess who gets hurt the most in a divorce? The kids. Children. So ladies and gentlemen, since our Hope episode just came out during this time of recording, the Greeks threw Trojan babies off the walls. That's what this leads to when you ignite that flame and stoke it. And there's other people, too, who I'd like to know. I want to actually call them out because this is bullshit. The Gutfeld had an episode on it, and he was going like, yeah, peaceful divorce. See, you know what? Divorce is great. Just tell me where I can put the in-laws, right? Ha, ha, ha. I'm like, no, this isn't funny. The Civil War was not great, guys. It wasn't. Actually, it's never been solved. That's why we're in this situation, because due to Abraham Lincoln's assassination, the Civil War never got done. It can still exist. You got assholes too, like, yeah, Megyn Kelly. She had a little interview episode with Dave Rubin. All she wanted was blood. She just wanted a pound of flesh. She wanted vengeance. Hell, she even said that I would be happy to pull the bullet trigger myself when this kid is marked guilty. And I'm like, this, that's not Christian.
All this for a shooter whose political motivation seemed to be very ambiguous.
But let's say it was, because what does it matter? It's just an asshole. It's just a psychopathic asshole.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just like, so this is all manufactured. This idea that the left killed Charlie Kirk. No. It was a disgruntled, sad, young man who clearly...
Whose parents weren't helping him.
Parents weren't helping him. He was online... way too much to the point where he clearly couldn't decipher between reality and fiction and right and wrong. This guy was not John Wilkes Booth shouting Sic Semper Tyrannis. No. I think this guy was just like, oh, Charlie Kirk, he's a big guy. He's coming to this school that I live close to. I think it'd be funny if I would shoot him. I really think that's what his mentality was, especially given like what was engraved on the fucking bullets.
It wasn't like the man who shot, you know, MLK, or the guy who shot or Lee Harvey Oswald, or the guy who shot Harvey Milk. He's not like them. This is the sad thing to say. This is what happens when the common man gets disgruntled. He has no, even, let's say he was a hardcore Democrat. Fine. That's not the left. That's one person. It wasn't like a mob came in and cleaned house. This is something different. This is just the sad thing of like, fuck, just one asshole.
It's like he's not that different from like most mass shooters. It's just another sad white boy that couldn't figure out a purpose in his life. So he said, huh, it'd be funny if I shot somebody. And of course, the media can't really report on that very well, because everybody, traditional media, still has a hard time understanding how internet culture works. It's hilarious to read mainstream journalists attempt to understand meme culture and forum culture. And everybody wants that narrative. Like, he did this for a reason. He had a very specific motivation to do what he did. Some people just don't. Like, most serial killers, you know, they did what they did because they were just sick fucks. They didn't have, like, a defined motivation or manifesto for what they did. They were just sick people that, and nobody helped, and nobody could help them, or nobody knew how to help them, or nobody knew that he needed help.
No, that's what this is, and it's sad because, and they're pushing violence over this, and that's the scary part, because there's two examples, two YouTubers who are big conservatives. I might be saying his name, last name wrong. Nick Freites, he's an ex SEAL, I believe.
Yeah.
I'll send you the link to his little Twitter post. I think it was the next day, and he basically said, "No, we can't coexist. It's done." And it's like, "Whoa, dude! Like, really? They, like, that's it? That's
they that. Want to kill people."
And then even Brett Cooper was like, "This, you know what? I agree with certain things here and that, but it's like, you know what? Nah, I'm done." And I'm like, oh, very Christian, very Catholic, very, very like I follow Jesus people. When you say like, well, this has been done to us for too long, it's time for them to have their medicine. No.
Even though when you look at statistics on political violence throughout the years, the vast majority of quote unquote politically motivated murders, it's always people that did it for right-wing purposes. It's like 75% of the time it's right-wing.
And the thing is, I saw one YouTube comment about saying, like, people are trying to understand why has this become so hot-button topic, volatile, such a revival in Christianity. And this one comment said, the one comment said the difference was when MLK, JFK, Bobby, Harvey Milk, Abraham Lincoln, when those men were shot, no one was publicly cheering. And I'm like, this, the internet and smartphones weren't even close to being around that time. How the fuck do you?
First of all, I guarantee you there were a lot of white rednecks when JFK was shot that were happy that guy bit the bullet. Hell, he wasn't even as popular. A lot of his reputation has kind of been like washed a bit, and now we consider him this saintly figure. But MLK was controversial, and he was getting more controversial around the time he got shot, because he started talking about we need to take care of poor people and not send them to Vietnam. There were a lot of people, I guarantee you. We just don't have the record, that kind of record of it, because the internet didn't exist yet.
This is our first assassination with iPhones, with smartphones. Really, this is for America. I know what happened to the two people in Minnesota.
But those were not public events. I understand. Yeah, I was trying to think of like, was there another high profile assassination that was like caught? Not really.
Parts of the world, not in America.
Not in America.
This was not, you know, MLK on the balcony, JFK driving a car, Bobby speaking.
And going like behind a kitchen. Yeah.
Yeah. This wasn't Abraham Lincoln at the theater.
No.
And this wasn't like Harvey Milk at work. Yeah. This was where there was a phone to record or a camera. No. There wasn't even security footage.
Yeah.
This is the first time where you got what? Let's say out of the 3,000 kids, 2,750 of them had their phones out.
Yeah.
And you have every conceivable humanly imaginative camera angle of a bullet going into his throat in an instant death kill where he kills over. First time in human history like that, and it was bombarded on every social media platform because, like, it's like George Floyd. For some reason, us in America just is murder porn. Thankfully, YouTube shut it down. It got blurred quick.
Yeah.
But it turned into murder porn for the first, what, 6 hours? That's a lot. That's hard. That's fast. It's gross. And that's what makes, that's why it's become this thing. That's why it become a key foothold for both. Well, glad I'm, you know, the quote unquote, glad I'm, he's fucking dead, or this is horrible. Like, yeah, blah, blah. And then the other people are like this. All right, we're done. We'll see you on the play. We'll see you outside. This is going to be a big revival. We're done talking. We want our country to ourselves now.
And let's stop getting hypothetical of what they're going to do and talk about what they're actually doing.
Well, these are the talks of what they actually want to do. Yeah. It's definitely, it used to be, because we've heard this before, especially during the first term of Trump, look, let the Democrats just have Oregon, Washington, California, and a couple, and New York, and we'll keep the rest. Mm-hmm. Those were the talks. Now it's like, this, and this is where it gets scarier, because it's not secession. This is not secession. This is different. On Gutfield, watch that clip when they're talking about the quote-unquote peaceful divorce. Well, actually, no, I like California. I don't want to give it up. Let's just put them somewhere else. Because here's the thing about California. You can shit on Democrats all you want. I'm unhappy with the Democratic Party the same way I'm unhappy with Republicans. California is the fourth largest economy in the world. If something happened to California, the USA is gone. America is gone. We are done. You need California. And that's why now they're saying, well, we want California. Let's just put them somewhere else. I like Oregon. Let's just keep that and we'll figure out somewhere else to put them. Is that called relocating?
Nah, it sounds like a cleansing.
That's, and that purges. And they're making jokes about it or being serious. Guarantee you that's being talked in the cabinet.
Well, yeah. Well, here's what we like know for sure. So recently, the president had Antifa declared a terrorist organization, even though Antifa is not a formal organization.
No, Bill Maher said it perfectly.
Trump said he was designated Antifa, a major terrorist organization, and they were shocked. They said, "We're organized?"
It's sad to say that Bill Maher's the only sane one out of everyone right now.
Dear God.
Watch his past two episodes. He's the only one who's actually going like, I fucking hate every citizen here.
Antifa is not like a real organization. It's more of a movement. It's like an aesthetic more than anything.
It's just people who like V for Vendetta too much.
But Antifa literally means anti-fascist. And here's the part where it gets scary. The government could use that to detain, and with the Patriot Act, detain without due process, perceived political dissidents because they spoke out against fascism. Theoretically, they could come after us because we've stated our opposition against fascism, which is technically what Antifa is. And they say, you're Antifa, you're a terror suspect, we're going to throw you in Guantanamo. They could do that to us.
El Salvador.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And we'll deport you to some godforsaken country that you have no connection to. Something else that's very scary. This is where my Holocaust analogy starts getting very real. The FBI has moved to declare all transgender people as, quote unquote, nihilistic violent extremists. They want to declare all transgender people as potential terror threats. And the only basis they have in regards to the Charlie Kirk thing, well, I guess, okay, technically the Minnesota shooter might have been trans or gender euphoria, whatever. Like, the one fucking time, which happened to happen 2 weeks before Charlie Kirk was murdered, the one time it was actually a trans person. Like, it finally happened. It wasn't a white guy for once. It was an actual trans person. But the one time it actually happened, oh, that's fair game. They're basically kind of sort of declaring trans people as potential enemies of the state.
Because the shooter who assassinated Kirk was in a relationship with someone who was about to become transgender.
In a relationship or was just roommates. I take a lot of that stuff with a grain of salt. But it's like, oh, he was with a trans person. So obviously this trans person infected this poor little white boy. Again, why I think Mrs. Kirk forgave him. It's actually kind of weird the way they harp on this so-called trans boyfriend person as if that's the real shooter. What they're actually doing is giving the real shooter an out. They're absolving this person of responsibility, even though he was the one that went through the trouble to get the gun and pull the trigger. But it's like, oh, it's not really his problem. He had a trans person that he was close to. So obviously they did it, if you really think about it, right? It reminds me of the Jean-Paul Sartre quote, if a Jew didn't exist, the anti-Semite would invent him. Now, obviously, he was talking about Jewish people, but I think the analogy fits very well here, where it's like, oh, we're just going to make up a spooky, spooky trans person that is the cause of all your problems.
So it's gotten worse, too, because apparently this guy, was Charlie Kirk's friend, a guy named Pastor Mark Driscoll. This happened about, I think it was also the Sunday after his death, his sermon, and I swear, listening to it, I'm like, you dumb fuck. Somehow connected, you know, because, okay, this guy who shot Charlie Kirk, you know, he was with someone who's transgender, you know, about to become. The thing about transgender is demons are transgender. Yeah, demons will appear to you either male or female, whatever way that needs to seduce you to commit sin. All transgender are demons. They're demonic. There's also other demonic religions, obviously. This pastor went on for a while about then demons because there's demonic religions. You know what the demonic religions are, apparently, Travis? I didn't know this, being a Catholic myself.
Islam, Judaism,
Mormons, and Catholics.
So I was right about Islam and Judaism.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just forgot the other two.
So, like I said, they're not going after the Jews for now, but they're on the list.
Oh, no, they kind of did, because there's another pastor, and I saw this, and I'm hunting this clip down again. It was the only description I give is a black pastor, because that's all I can remember, because I was trying to find the name. He said, okay, Ben Shapiro wants to carry on Charlie Kirk's legacy by picking up that bloodstained microphone. I don't want him touching that microphone because he's a Jew. We want a Christian who believes in Christ being king. A Jew does not help our cause. And I'm like, oh, wow, you guys were united for about 48 hours. Now you're falling apart quick.
And Tucker Carlson, at giving his eulogy to Charlie Kirk, comparing him to Jesus Christ, and specifically, he went on a lot about how the conspiracy to kill Christ, but he kept on saying they, but at one point he said that they were eating hummus as they were. So it's like, oh, you're talking about Jews, and which also doesn't help the fact that a lot of people think there's a lot of conspiracy theories that Israel was somehow behind this.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, because you know who's pushing that, right?
Candace Owens.
Yeah, apparently.
Of who is like close friends of Charlie Kirk.
Was.
And also an ally of Tucker Carlson's to a certain degree.
Yeah, no, she's pushing this hard that the Israeli government killed him. It wasn't just some distraught white boy, because there's apparently a hidden camera angle that got collected and has not since been released to the public or even the federal government. She got a hold of it and looked at it.
Only her got a hold of
it. Two guys who apparently work for Turning Point USA collected it, but still haven't given it to the feds. They gave her the file, and it's a camera from behind Charlie's head. There's a picture she's blasting to show proof, and the thing that gets her very... not basically she's not convinced about this assassination is there's no blood coming out from the back of his neck. There's no exit wound.
Yes, because she's a medical examiner as well.
And she is pissed because she believes that she believes this because apparently 2 weeks leading up to his death, he was being financially pressured and threatened to turn his opinion about Israel and Palestine, because apparently Kirk was having a lot of moral dilemma and starting to say, like, you know what? No, the Israeli government is doing a genocide. This is horrible.
See, here's my doubt on that being a moral dilemma. I think that meeting with, I think the donor's name is Bill Ackman. I think that meeting did happen because the Majority Report, they've gone into that as well. They've done some they've done a little casual investigating and thinking, oh, I think that might have happened. But I don't think that was a moral dilemma for Kirk.
You think the moral dilemma wasn't Charlie?
No, I think it was like a financial dilemma, because here's the thing. Israel is becoming less and less popular in the United States because they're just doing bad shit in Gaza, and everybody knows it. Everybody can see it on their phone. That's another instance where there's like real life violent imagery easily accessible to your phones. The amount of like dead babies I have seen that I didn't want to see, but I just stumbled upon on my phone because of this genocide in Gaza. A lot of people are sick of it. I don't know how many of them are like deeply like deeply committed to like the plight of the Palestinians, but they don't like the fact that we are that the United States is funding a mass slaughter. And the Democrats and Republicans have not been doing a good job giving like excuses for like, why the fuck are we supposed to care about Israel that much? And this is happening on the right and on the left. There is dissent on the right, even though the right is generally more pro-Israel than the left, but it's happening on the right, and people like Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson and Nick Fuentes, maybe Megyn Kelly as well, but the names I mentioned all have a history of anti-Semitic remarks. They're trying to capitalize on that and be like, no, 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 we are the anti-Zionist right, and we are, and you know, we are the places to come if you're kind of sick of Israel, and maybe you don't like Jews that much. And if you're not there at the Jew hate part, we'll get you there. I mean, what the stuff that Candace Owens is doing is interesting in like, you know, a let them fight sort of way, but it's hard to trust anything she says. You know, I believe the official story that like it was just some poor, it was just some dumb guy.
He's a dumb kid.
Yeah, I don't want to call him kid because he's 20. He's a grown adult.
Here's the thing, though. Every fucking person over 30 looks at the young 20-year-olds as kids.
Yeah.
Hell, I have coworkers who look at me, a 30-year-old man, as a kid. Yeah. So, no. And here's the thing. I'm 30, and it's a dumb kid because he did something horrifically, psychotically stupid and evil.
That's another thing to worry about is, like, you know, like, that this is, you know...
This conspiracy.
Conspiracy that... will not benefit Jewish people, that will, especially right now, like hate crimes against Jewish people have been like skyrocketing for the past 2 months, in part because of what's been going on in Gaza. That's been used as a motivation or an excuse. And it's like, it's another thing. It's like, in addition to transphobia being like just weaponized, like fucking crazy to like, let me go back. I just want to say I have a lot of trans fans, and I really, really feel for them right now. I really feel bad. I can't imagine what they're going through in all of this. Like, this is terrifying. This has got to be fucking terrifying. And
because what it is, you know, the mindset of people who aren't you and the majority of who you live with and grew up with. Mm-hmm. Let's go into this conversation. I'm glad we're doing this right now, because here's the thing. You and I, for 4 years, 3 to 4 years of our high school career, drama. I know you're in choir and I was in dance, but let's talk about drama.
We did performing arts.
We did performing arts, but specifically let's talk the drama club. Now, on stereotypical outlook, when you hear about drama kids, they're just goofy, weird, oddly emotional, touchy-feely, all the stereotypical crap we've heard about making fun of drama kids and all that. Mm-hmm. So, okay, you and I are in drama. You and I have worked with almost basically everyone under the sun. Really, from color, creed, and gender identity. We've worked with lesbians, we've worked with bisexuals, worked with the gay, you know, gay men, well, boys, I should say, because we were teenagers at that time. So, and then we also worked with, you know, Asians, blacks, Mexicans, Muslims, whites, Italians, everything you can think of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hell, I'm Hispanic, Chinese, and with Navajo, and I think Cheyenne in my blood. You have your blood, right? But we've worked with everyone. Guess what? I think everything was fine those 4 fucking years. Do we have disagreements on certain things of like movies and food and other conversations? There was surprisingly drama behind the scenes in drama club with personal shit. But the thing is, no one, even if there was some students who we know who had legit hatred for others being different in their hearts, were they professional? Every one of them was. What I'm trying to say is it baffles my mind for people who hate others for being different, not the status quo, or not living up to what their scripture says. I have worked with everyone under the sun. I have never had a problem. I have had crushes, dated, fell in love with the majority of everyone under the sun. Mm-hmm. Never had a fucking problem with anyone. So it baffles my mind that we still just forget the fucking globe and the world, just alone within our borders of America, can't figure out this melting pot shit. That the great experiment is still an experiment after how many decades? It baffles my fucking mind.
And I always have to stop and think. The root of it all is How can we make rich people richer? And how do we get away with that without campaigning on that? Because that's not something people would want to vote for.
Oh, they don't, because their great-grandfathers got beaten to death in the Union Buster days of the 20s and the 10s and the 30s. And the thing about it, I honestly think of that one scene from Boys to Men.
Wait, Boys in the Hood?
Sorry, Boys in the Hood. Sorry.
Boys to Men is a group.
I know. It's paraphrasing it, but when Lawrence Fishburne's character is talking to the two main leads about, you know, why is there a liquor store on every corner? Well, the same reason why there's a gun store on every corner. They want us to kill ourselves. It's literally this. Why is there only two political parties in this fucking country? The same reason why those two political parties won't allow any other political party to have a seat at a table. They want us to kill ourselves because that makes money. It's odd enough that killing your workforce actually does make you richer. Having them want to kill each other, having them antagonistic to each other, having them fearful of each other just for being different than the quote-unquote average status quo of what the country used to be for our parents and grandparents. It's like, hey, we can make money off this out of fear, because fear leads to hatred. You know, fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to, because it's true. It's sad that Star Wars is that true, that we're suffering now because that's how you make money. Make money off of fear and hate. Look at his memorial. Charlie Kirk's memorial alone.
The Diet RNC, basically.
It was an RNC.
It's just a giant convention.
At the Cardinals Stadium, at State Farm, yes. with hats, the fireworks, the pageantry. I thought I was watching a Glastonbury clip for a second.
I saw all of that, especially like the fireworks with a widow. The grieving widow, who has every right to grieve. Freaking fireworks. It looks so tasteless. And all I could think of is like, this is some like white trash shit that was just given a lot of money. Like this reminds me of like rednecks thinking like, oh, my funeral, I want there to be fireworks, but unfortunately I'm too poor for that. Like it reminded me of that, except just they had a lot of money thrown at it, and a lot of money, no taste.
And look, and then how much donations increased and memberships increased for Turning Point alone. It's dumb that having hatred amongst each other for just looking different, acting different, dressing different, and fucking differently. We can make money off this. And it says also, too, with the fucking part, I bet in the human history that homosexuality has existed, just to say in this country, I bet some of those men have fucked a kid. But guess what? I know there's a lot of fucking heterosexuals who also fucked children. So there's no fucking difference. So you touch a kid, fuck you, you're evil, you should die. So it shouldn't matter who you fuck, how you like to fuck, and how you identify. I don't really give a shit how people identify. You know why? I have a job to do. I work, I move on, I don't care. You're going to help me do my job with us together or go to your own section, because it doesn't matter to me. It just baffles my mind that we're still to this day having a hard time coexisting. So we're at the point now where one side is loudly saying, hey, it's easier, just we're not coexisting anymore. We're going to move you somewhere else.
While in the same breath decrying political violence,
yeah,
as having no place in this guy. Okay, that's another thing that annoyed me. And I've been wanting to talk about this for a while.
Just talk about it.
Anybody who says, no matter what, no matter who it is, anyone that says like political violence has no place in this country is either lying to you, stupid, or they're like the biggest tie-dye t-shirt wearing hippie pacifist you've ever met. Let's really, really break this down. Do you celebrate the American Revolution? If the answer is yes, then congratulations. You celebrate political violence, because we had to fight a fucking war to get that independence.
Not only that, we also had to kill our own neighbors.
Yeah.
And children were shot.
When King George read the Declaration of Independence, he didn't go, ah, guys, you got me. Let's work this out. We can talk. You know what? You're right. You deserve your independence. No.
Damn it, Sam Adams. Let's have some beer.
To quote Hamilton. 'Cause when push comes to shove, I will kill your friends and family to remind you of my love. Da, 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 da.
Or as I like to quote the Patriot,
this war will be fought not on the frontier or on some distant battlefield, but amongst us. among our homes. Our children will learn of it with their own eyes, and the innocent will die with the rest of us.
And the war lasted 8 years. It was 8 years of murder. It was 8 years of violence to get to secure that independence.
And then there was still other bullshit afterwards. Because let's talk about another thing about, okay, violence, political violence. What happened after the Revolutionary War? Not even 100 fucking years later.
Oh, we started fighting yourselves because some people wanted to literally own people. And
it's funny how those states who, people who live in those states who used to want to own people, you know, trying to be saying used to because I'm still being hopeful. Who shot first? That's right. We know who, but Fort Sumner, what happened first. It was out of fear that, oh, they're going to come and take away our slaves. So out of fear, let's go bomb Fort Sumner. And that lasted, what, 4 years? 600,000 plus?
Yeah.
France and Britain were enemies because of that. One took one side, one took the other. And then, to win that war against, I'm saying it, it's against slavery. Well, it's against state rights, against slavery.
Even PragerU admits it was for slavery.
But here's the thing. To fully win that war, one of the most atrocious things that had to be done, the equivalent of a nuke at that time, was Sherman's March. Yeah. What was the orders? 60 miles wide, lay everything to waste, live off the land. Yeah, I bet no children got killed.
Yeah, I bet that was a very peaceful city destruction.
And then let's think about another. Let's go further than with violence within this country. So I'm not going to talk about World War I or World War II, even though the death of a lot of sailors got us into the war. Let's talk about other shit. Okay, political violence. I talked about the union crap from the 1910s and 1920s. All those great union benefits that dock workers and truck drivers and anyone else who has a union card, guess what had to happen? Yeah. A lot of people had to fucking kill cops, and a lot of cops had to kill people. My mom still tells me stories from her dad when he would sometimes come home a bit bloodied from roughing up union busters during union strikes back in the, you know, from the 70s and 80s, the story she heard.
Let's get even more, I mean, let's get even like, oh, let's get as
what?
Like
the UC Davis, let's go there?
No, let's get as like least controversial as possible. Like you mentioned World War II. Do you think the Allies should have participated and fought the Nazis and the Japanese?
Well, I'm glad they dropped those fucking bombs. I'm glad.
Well, okay, you support political violence. If you think we were heroes for participating in that, you support political violence. Let's get the least controversial. My designation of this will be controversial, but the actual opinion is not. Do you support the existence of a police force? Do you support
security, basically a security force?
Do you support a group of armed individuals enforcing the laws through violent means if necessary, laws that were passed by the government, an organization run by politicians, all with their own political agendas?
With a union.
Which, yeah. And therefore making all those laws that have to be enforced because they're all politically motivated in their creation, political in some sort of way, and as well as the fact that the existence of the police is what gives the local government its power. Do you support the existence of a police with all that in mind? And if the answer is yes, if the answer is you're okay with all of that, which is not a controversial opinion, by the way, most people support that. And if you're one of those people, congratulations, you endorse political violence.
Here's, I got one. Hey, Travis, I got one for you. Do you support the CIA, FBI, NSA, and ATF, and, you know, and all those organizations for the overall security of a country? Guess what? If it's yes, then you're okay with Waco. You're okay with the the assassination of, sorry, I forgot his name, but the movie Black Messiah, Judas and the Black Messiah?
Fred Hampton.
There you go. In his house, next to his pregnant wife.
Political violence applies to a lot of things. It's the idea that the statement political violence has no place in this country, a country that was literally founded by political violence, is such a stupid thing to say. And it's like, okay, there are better ways to sort of, if you want to universalize the death, the murder of Charlie Kirk as like a profound statement,
a revival, awakening, a turning point.
I mean, political violence has no place in this country. I guess that's like a very snappy way of saying it. You know, assassinations, we're starting to see a bit of a rise in assassinations and assassination attempts in this country, like it's the 60s again. That does concern me. And like, okay, you know, I think we've sufficiently argued the point that, like, you know, there are some political violence, there's a lot of political violence that's actually good, or more importantly, that we agree with, that we accept as being
socially acceptable. Yes,
there is political violence that you can deem is not acceptable. The fact that someone got a hold of a sniper rifle and shot somebody
so easily
in the civilian public space, that's a bad thing. That is just in general a bad thing.
I like how you said public space, because I swear the rhetoric after the first 48 hours from mostly the Daily Wire about, like, we have to have a safe, guaranteed safety in the marketplace in America. Marketplace in America has to be safe. That was Michael Knowles.
He phrased it as the marketplace?
In a marketplace setting. You know, because, you know, back then when someone was talking, it was in the marketplace on a you know, box.
Mm.
You know, because yes, they're evoking Jesus. What I'm saying is, though, you think about that, though. The marketplace has to be a guaranteed safe place and space for everyone to commute, to shop, to talk, to commerce and all that, right? No, listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the marketplace. Transactions happen there, right?
Yes.
Wish that movie theater in Colorado was safe. I wish that country festival in Vegas was safe. I wish college campuses and school campuses where there are transactions happening and people are conversing and learning and talking and engaging with each other were safe. But I guess this one death for sure outweighs the thousands now since 2000, since Columbine till now. But hey, like you said, we thought the death of 26 fucking toddlers would have been enough
to say, hey, maybe there's too many guns out there.
We thought the deaths at a country music festival, not EDM, not hip hop rap homeboy, not, you know, Hail Satan metal bands. No, a country festival. That wasn't enough. Virginia Tech wasn't enough. I mean, shoot, John Stewart did that big ass fucking list. Hell, even at a couple of churches, wasn't enough. But this one, now it's like, hey, got to be safer now.
Well, except they're still going to do nothing. They're not going to do anything. No, actually, no. Here's what they're going to do. They're just going to take guns away from trans people, which, what, make up, what, like 1% of the population? Yes, and are responsible for, like, what, 0.001% of all major shootings?
But Travis, don't you see, once that is taken care of, everything else will now fall into place peacefully.
That's the bullshit. That is the silliness they want you to believe.
They want us to kill ourselves. It makes more money that way. They want us to hate each other. Personally, I think, I know it's just one side being the loudest with the whole rhetoric of who's the enemy, who's this. I blame both sides. I blame both sides heavily for this shit. Because during Obama's years, it did not help anyone calling the middle of the country the flyover states with that rhetoric and the hillbilly stuff. Yes, I know it's a little different the way it was went about. This shit did not happen. This falls on everyone's hands.
Well, and also, what was the right doing at that time? They were protesting the president, dressing up like Revolutionary War soldiers, proclaiming themselves to be the spiritual successors of the American Revolution. They called themselves the Tea Party in reference to what many people say was the inciting incident of the American Revolution. That was violent symbolism. And this goes to the fact that the American Revolution was a violent event. You can't separate the violence from the revolution. What they were doing is violence. I remember during the 2010 midterms, I think Sarah Palin and other, hopefully that name is also like a, whoa, that takes me back kind of moment. Like there was like a map that was going around through some conservative electoral action circles. And it was like, here are the districts we want to flip for 2010. And all the districts are marked with crosshairs.
Because it sells.
That stuck in my head as a kid. This is like, they're using violent imagery. They're all suggesting violence. They're all dog whistling violence.
In the same way when Trump first campaigned saying, well, only half the country matters.
Go beat up the people that protest for me. I will pay your legal fees, except he didn't.
Or I could take someone out and shoot him on the Washington Boulevard right now and I'll be fine.
Or back in my day, you know, the hecklers would have been taken out on a stretcher. This whole idea, like the flyover state, okay, yeah, that's kind of, maybe that's disrespectful. I do not think that's in the same league. And mind you, I forgot to make this connection. The Tea Party gave us MAGA. The Tea Party turned into MAGA. They were the foundation for MAGA. Trump just simply gave it the name Make America Great Again, and then, like, bam. The movement exists. Now we found our leader. We can rally behind him.
Even though the party didn't want him.
Even though the party didn't want him, the voters did. The party voters did.
They tried so hard.
So I'm sorry. I just have this whole idea, like, that the leftists, liberals, and the conservatives and the fascists, they won't call themselves that. Like, they're all equal in wanting violence against each other. They're all equal in on the assault. I don't believe that. No. I mean, fucking Charlie Kirk celebrated Kyle Rittenhouse. He stood on stage beside Kyle Rittenhouse, put his hand on his back, hailed him as a hero. Charlie Kirk was calling for Derek Chauvin to be pardoned after he murdered George Floyd. Can you think of any mainstream major figure who was celebrating that guy that attempted to shoot Trump in Butler, Pennsylvania, whose name escapes me, which probably is a sign that the answer is no, because they weren't talking about him like he was some martyr in the fight against MAGA or anything. It was like, oh, it's just some fucked up kid. Where are the leftists, the elected Democrats, the MSNBC pundits that were championing violence against right-wingers? Where is that? Who are those people? They don't exist. It's not true, but I can point to a bunch of people in the Fox News, in the literal frickin' White House, in the halls of Congress, who have an R next to their name, that have been calling for violence on the left, that have been using the word war a lot. This means war. One of the reasons I identify as a leftist is because, like, I want life to be better for everybody. Not just the people I like. Like, I want it to be better for everybody. That's the whole reason why I identify as a leftist. It's like, well, this is what I want. Oh, is that referred to as leftism? Okay, well, I guess I'm a leftism. The values of humanism came before, you know, I found a politically catchy label to it. And I don't want to kill anybody. I don't want to hurt anybody. I do want the people that do want to kill people be stripped of their power and stripped of their microphone. Because when they do that, they are motivating others to do that. One quote I've been thinking about a lot, and it's not often I quote Israeli politicians, and she was not like a saint figure, but former Prime Minister of Israel, Golda Meir, had this saying, "You can't negotiate with people that want to kill you." You see all sorts of liberals and Democrats talking about how they want to capitulate to the right. Ezra Klein wrote a stupid op-ed in the New York Times, making it like acting like he was taking responsibility for any rhetoric and saying we need change. It's like, no, nothing you say is going to change these people's mind. I posted on my Facebook like a post saying I didn't want Charlie Kirk murdered, but he was not a good person. And I had some people accusing me of cheering for his death because my take on it was so inefficient. I wasn't calling Kirk the God's gift from God, and now I'm an evil person for having the temerity to give nuanced criticism of his rhetoric, and that is the equivalent as wanting him dead, which means they want me dead. Maybe they are onto something, or maybe I'm just really mad and upset, where they're like, we can't coexist. Well, maybe they're right, because they want to kill me. And they want to kill people. More importantly, they want to kill certain people that I love and care about. And I can't coexist with people like that. So it's like, you tone down the violent rhetoric. You first. Stop going after people I care about. Stop using this dead man to go after people I care about. And then maybe we can talk peace.
So you think right now it's a standstill in the sense for the conversation with what our political leaders are trying to are doing? Because they are. Here's the thing. Like I said, by Sunday, it's funny how the Republicans were super united and then it started breaking apart once again, like it has been this year. Cracks in the line. Yeah. Candace Owens and Megyn Kelly threatening to throw certain unnamed Republicans under the bus because they were telling them financial threats about, you know, the Israel and Palestine situation, or to cut ties with Tucker Carlson and to involve Charlie Kirk. Hell, the Jimmy Kimmel situation divided them even more.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder if that it was like the if that was like the bridge too far. Because as of when we're recording, he's hours away of making his return.
And who knows what will happen by the time this episode's released on the 30th of September. Who knows? Because St. Clair is refusing to air it on any ABC channel. Hell, who's this? Whoever the CEO of St. Clair is, he's told Jimmy Kimmel like he needs to personally apologize to Mrs. Kirk and personally donate to Turning Point. That's the only way he can atone. And I'm like, ugh, that's horrible. That's a horrible political thing to get involved with our television and media, especially with the guy who runs the FCC.
Yeah, he kind of pulled the Schrodinger's douchebag thing where he dog whistled the idea like, well, you know, the rhetoric on ABC and then Jimmy Kimmel, you know, we might have to like pull some station licenses. And then he walked it back yesterday saying, whoa, I didn't say the thing that I totally said.
That's recorded on the internet.
Whoa. I didn't mean it like that.
For a quick sidestep for people who are going like, well, yeah, look what Jimmy Kimmel said. He was misleading the populace. Okay. Every fucking news organization has done that. I'm not just saying Fox News is being a guilty culprit. Yeah. I'm saying in the history of American news and American television, every motherfucker has done it at one point. Nothing's happened. But since people like to bring up, you know, like, well, look what happened to, you know, Roseanne, how she was freedom of speech. She called, a politician an ape. She called a black politician an ape, which she herself said, I was completely at fault. I was on an Ambien binge. And then the Gina Carano thing. She signed a contract that basically said she has to adhere what the company thinks can be said on Twitter.
Also, both of these things happened under Trump's first administration, and they were not the result of the federal government weighing in at all. That was completely within Disney's purview.
Nor did the federal government step in to protect those rights that were stripped.
Yeah, they didn't. Yeah, like Trump didn't threaten ABC. I mean, he might now if such a thing were to happen now. But like he didn't step in and be like, whoa, ABC can't do that. I'm gonna have the FCC pull their licenses.
Trump didn't get involved when Candace Owens got canned from the Daily Wire. Right? Hey, she was saying stuff that someone didn't like. And remember, Ben Shapiro twisted it. Well, we're not a news organization. We're a personality. We're an entertainment, basically, conglomerate. We're not, you know. And then even when Tucker got canned. Well, who didn't protect him?
Did that happen actually under Biden? But he found a home under Elon.
But no one went. But just saying, it's like, don't bullshit this with the Kimmel thing. What it is that someone got involved saying, I don't like what you're saying, change it. We've all listened to what he said.
It was a very tame joke, actually.
Well, there's nothing damaging out of disrespect towards...
He was insulting Trump, not...
In the shooter part, going like, oh, it's just another MAGA thing. Like, this is like, dude, we listened to it. There's nothing... There's been worse. I've seen and heard worse, and no one's had to apologize for it in the news. Regardless of any news organization you follow and listen to, no. We've heard and seen worse. No one's ever had to apologize. So don't bullshit us. They got involved. But a lot of people, unfortunately, I brought her up, like Brett Cooper. She's like, no, I'm glad this is happening. It's their turn now to feel it. It's like, yeah, that's very Christian. It's your turn now. Is vengeance very Christian-like? I mean, I know we're Catholics, so we're not evangelicals, Travis, but I don't think Jesus would be like that. It's funny because when I was taught about Jesus and raised, very, very free medical, that guy.
They make me ashamed of my Christian upbringing, and yet they also make me want to go back to church just so I could have like a proper pedestal to be like, you're doing it wrong. I know better than you.
No, honestly, they just make me glad that I'm a Catholic the way I practice my Catholicism. That's it. Because guess what? I work on Sundays. I have a family to feed. I work. Whatever disagreements that, you know, God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit have with me, I'll handle it when I die and we'll have a nice conversation. Right now, I have a job to do as a father. But look, at a lot of these very hardcore, devout followers of Christ.
All of those words should be in quotes.
Want blood, want vengeance, want payback.
They want Kristallnacht. And they want everything that happened after Kristallnacht.
I'm still hoping that there's still a chance that with this temperature, and I hate to say the rhetoric because everyone's used it, but we can cool this down, realize people that there's no such thing as peaceful divorce. We go down that route of the peaceful divorce, a lot of people are going to die. And it won't be people who are fighting. It'll be children. It'll be people running for their lives. It'll be people cowering in fear. It'll be people who can't escape. It'll be, it will, and I'll say it again, because I did say it in the Hope episode that came out before this. It'll be babies thrown off of buildings, because that has happened in human history. The thing is this, once again, the way this country was founded, yes, it was founded on violence. This country that was founded that the power is in our hands, not theirs. Ralphie May said it perfectly. I've quoted it multiple times. It's not black versus white. It's rich versus poor. What color are you? I'm broke. They're doing this to keep us focused on ourselves for no reason and not looking up at the, you know, man at the high castle, what's going on there. Do not believe, whatever you vote for, however you believe, cooler heads prevail. You have to do that. Stop talking violent rhetoric. Stop celebrating or martyring this man's death. Move on from it. You need to go. Fuck, here's my challenge. Remember how I challenge people to say, hey, the next person you see, just say good morning to them? Remember that? This is my challenge. Someone who's completely fucking different from you, go buy them breakfast and have food with them. That's the whole, what's it called when that trend, you know, paying it back or paying it forward?
Pay it forward, I think.
Because this is what Christ did, right? He broke bread. Best way to have conversations with people is over food. Do that. That's my challenge. We cannot have this tension anymore. We have to start working together regardless of how we are, regardless of how you feel, because this is what I believe. We're not supposed to like each other. We're supposed to respect each other. I don't give a shit what you believe in and how you pray. We have to clock in. We have to move this stuff. We have to stock stuff. We have to drive stuff. We have to sell stuff. We have to paint stuff. We have to manufacture stuff. Shake my hand. Let's go home. Be with your family, and I'll be with mine. I will preach what I preach in my household, but it'll stay in the walls of my household because functioning members of society don't give a fuck how we think or pray. We have to work together. That's what I believe. That's what I'm trying to say right now as a positive, is that respect each other. Go break bread. Buy each other food. Find a conversation. Realize that it's those who are rich. And it's, I'm not going to do that rhetoric that Carlin said about it's rich old white men. No, it's just rich people in general. Because guess what? When the California fucking fires were happening, how many rich fucking Hollywood people stepped up? Really? Yeah, fuck you, Kim Kardashian. Fuck you, Leonardo DiCaprio. Fuck you, Mark Ruffalo. You've been so loud right now with Kimmel. Where are all the fucking Avengers then? So it's rich versus poor. Because we have to unite as a country once again. Because the sad thing is, I'd rather us have a common enemy. And sadly, the common enemy, and I will say it, it is across the Pacific. It's getting very dangerous over there across the Pacific. That is our real enemy, sadly. I wish it wasn't. I like Chinese food. I like fucking Dr. Zhivago.
Like I said, I'm all for unity and whatnot. I'm all for holding hands, but as I said, let me expand upon the Golda Meir quote. I cannot be friends with someone who thinks lesser of me. I cannot shake hands with someone who wants to have more power than me. I cannot be with someone who would sooner see me dead. I'm not saying everything you're saying is wrong, but I'm also urging caution. You know, I mean, the right have been trying to do this, like, they've been trying to, like, take cancel culture as, like, oh, it's our thing. Now it's our turn to get people fired. Now it's our turn to create doxing lists that are publicly accessible online so that you could, I don't know, find out where people live, go break into their houses, and commit some violence. This is a good time to fully assess who your actual friends are. Who are the people that will stand by you and won't sell you out? If this is Nazi Germany, this is the time to figure out who would sell out your Jewish neighbors. And more importantly, who will not sell out your Jewish neighbors. I know they say keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
But you only do that so you can kill your enemy.
Yeah, exactly.
People watch The Godfather, but no one ever read the fucking book. God damn.
So really, no. Keep your friends close, but really keep them close this time. You know, it's a type of violence we haven't talked about. You ever heard the term stochastic violence?
I've heard that. I think you've said that to me once. Please explain it for me and the audience.
There's a difference between stochastic violence and incitement to violence. And the difference is how direct you are with your language. If I say, there are these people I don't like. I don't like these people. I wish they were dead. I wish someone would go and do some harm to them right now. And then you, part of my loyal audience in whatever forum or podcast I'm saying this on, you decide to get a weapon, go to place where people I don't like congregate, and do a rooty-tooty point-and-shooty. And now let's say you get caught.
Oh, I know where you're going with this, I think. Okay.
And you say, hey, Travis Baker told me to do this. Well, since I literally did say I want someone to do that, I could get into some serious trouble for that, and that would be incitement to violence. However, if all I said was, I don't like these people, they're a threat to this country and civilization and everything I like, oh, wouldn't it be just nice if they went away, if they didn't exist anymore, same situation repeats. I could be like, whoa, I didn't say someone should go kill them. I didn't technically say that. I just said these people suck and they're awful and you know, a scourge to the human race and blah, 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 blah. But I didn't say anyone should actually hurt them. Oh, no. And that is a legal distinction in the United States.
That sounds like a fucking good lawyer bullshit. What was that? What's that called? A lawyer's dodge?
Yeah. So that's stochastic violence, is when you're kind of advocating for people to be harmed without actually saying it.
Basically pussyfooting it without having the balls.
In other countries, if you're doing that against like ethnic or religious minorities, say like a lot of countries in Europe, you could still get in trouble for that, even if you're being indirect about your language, as I was. You know, because they have hate speech laws. But here, hate speech is free speech, therefore it's fair game. And, oh, if someone else listens to my words and interprets them as a call to violence, well, that's them. That's their problem. I'm not responsible for that, legally speaking.
That sounds like someone interpreting the fucking Bible, and that's why we have so many fucking branches of the same goddamn thing. That's why we have Lutherans, Baptists, Evangelicals, Quakers, and every other bullshit.
You can say Matthew was committing stochastic violence when he wrote that verse about the Israelites claiming that the death of Christ will be on their hands and their children's hands, committing stochastic violence for two millennia. Quite a champ there. Although, according to Wikipedia, the earliest known example, it's actually a lot funnier. In the 1100s, King Henry II had an emotional outburst because I guess a priest by the name of Thomas Becket was giving him some trouble or whatever. And he said, won't someone rid me of this turbulent priest? Well, a group of knights heard that. They interpreted that as an order from the king, and they went out and murdered Thomas Becket. And that is said to be kind of the earliest known recorded example of stochastic violence. I bring up the stochastic violence thing because that term has been used a lot when talking about figures like Charlie Kirk or Ben Shapiro or literally any other pundit we've talked about in this really, really long episode. When you look at like the things these people said about minority groups, really think about what they were saying, what their grievances were, and what would have to be done to address those grievances. If you can't find a solution that doesn't result in any form of violent force, how peaceful were and are these people in real life? And why would I want to break bread with them if that's how they talk about other people? If they change their mind, if they have their come to Jesus moment, I'm open to talk. But until then, they are a danger.
I know. I say that due to the fact of hope and basically putting money on the table, you know, wallet where their mouth is, about what Jesus would do, how Jesus is. Jesus would break bread with his enemies. He would put himself in danger for the greater good of mankind. Yeah, it's dangerous to say. It is, because that's asking for death. That's asking for pain. That's asking for suffering. But if they're gonna say all this stuff recently about Christ, Charlie Kirk being a faithful servant, you know, the will of God, the beautiness of, you know, Christ being king and all that, which I don't agree with Christ being king. I'm an American. I don't believe in kings. Then fine. We have to, then let's really put the whole Christ thing on the table. let's go break bread. Let's talk this out amongst us. Fuck the rich. Fuck who's in charge. The common man has to do this to change the tide. That's what I mean. Because I have to have hope. Because if I don't have hope, then it's lock and load. And I don't want that. Because it's not what people think. Because anytime someone thinks it'll be quick and swift, what happens? No. World War One. How many British soldiers were marching jolly and singing songs? And then what happened? Civil War. People were having picnics during the first battle of the Civil War. Picnics going like this. Oh, yeah. The North is going to wipe the fucking floor with them. What happened? World War II. Poland will figure it out. Britain will figure it out. France will figure it out. All right, the Japanese attacked us. We're going to fuck them up. We can grab, what was it, a good quote, and it was from the Pacific. We'll grab those bastards by their balls. What happened? Look how long that took the Pacific. And then with the Nazis. So that's why, because of how long and brutal and bad it will be, and I will still say it again, if there is a civil war, and I pray to my God that there's not, whoever's left as the winner, the rest of the world will tear them apart for the scraps. Because we do have the best country in the world because of our land, because of our vitality, because of the two oceans on its side, because of all the resources, all the entertainment set up, all the cities. We have a great country. The rest of the world wants us gone. I believe that. I believe the rest of the world wants us gone so they can have what's left, because they can have the fruit. I do. And I would like to say one more thing, too, because I think why a lot of people more are so, as you know, moved and affected by this man's assassination, they have to grapple with a very hard realization with their faith. Because here's the thing. I was told this a lot growing up, and I've seen and have been a part of unfortunate horror. How many times have you heard this phrase? And when I'm saying this, this is not a knock. I am a Catholic. Yeah. I believe there is a God. I just question it. But I've heard this saying so much. God has a plan. Have you heard that a lot? No, that's saying God has a plan. You know when I've heard that? I heard that when I was with my cousin when he was burying his newborn son who was 2 weeks from being born. He died with his umbilical cord wrapped around his neck. I heard from multiple people, okay, God has a plan. We're going to figure out why.
It's a very unsatisfying answer.
No, but here's the thing. Hold on. God has a plan. I heard that growing up slowly through other people, because when I was six, I had no choice of my own because the doctors forgot about me. I had to listen to a four-month-old little girl scream to death. Well, God has a plan. I'm the reason I lived. She didn't. We're in the same room. God has a plan. And I say this, I'm not being rude. I'm being respectful. I think a lot of people on the right are upset because now they're really faced with the whole God has a plan. His death. Look for their side, for their ideology, for their way of thinking, for their lifestyle that they want to push. The only negative that came out is that unfortunately a woman has to raise her children by herself as a widow. But look at the surge of revival and unity that happened, even though they're fragmenting over bullshit. But look at that. Does God has a plan? I'm just saying, oh, this is not disrespectful. I'm being very serious about that phrase, God has a plan. I honestly think one of the other reasons why they're so angry is that they came face to face for once in their lives as a not individual tragedy, but group tragedy. Think of, you know, from their perspective, God has a plan. It's a very hard pill to swallow and to be able to say, be able to use that as a focal point to get through a tragedy. It's a group tragedy. They seek Charlie Kirk's assassination as a group tragedy. God has a plan. When you're face to face with your actual religious teachings, it does hurt. Yeah. It's a smack in the face. Because here's the thing. Everyone would love to live their life like Jesus. Because all he did was just, hey, love each other. Let's have bread and wine. I'm going to heal you. We're going to walk on water. Let's have a good time. Hanging out with thieves and gamblers and prostitutes. Sounds like a Vegas party to me, really.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to walk this path. Who wants to get whipped with cat nines? Have the thorn, the crucifixion, the betrayal of friends. That is walking his path. I really do, because we brought up some religious stuff with the whole rhetoric of how to the dialogue. The types of speeches, Jesus, God has a plan. That's a tough pill to swallow when you're dealing with something that's not personal. When it's personal, anyone can say it to you. Hell, both my boys were NICU babies. I almost fuck socked this NICU nurse for when she said to my wife, who was crying, you know, God only gives, burdens us with what we can handle. I didn't ask to be handling this shit.
I swear to God, I find that to be like, actually genuinely insulting. Just that God is a plan. No, it's like, you know what? I like the ideology of shit happens, and it's like, and like sometimes you just got dealt with a bad hand.
Everyone gets stabbed. That's why it's a poker table. You get multiple decks of cards. Learn how to gamble safely and properly.
Yeah.
So you don't lose all your money at once, but you're going to get bad hands once in a while. But I'm just saying that if you're going to preach all this shit, Jesus Christ is king, God has a plan, all that, you're seeing a group of people really faced with the actual teachings of their religion right here and now. And you know what it is? Because his I forget the exact biblical verse his wife, Erica Kirk, was quoting. But apparently during one of his big speeches a few years ago, he said basically, Lord, use me as your will. And she said at that memorial, like, I wish he had told me before he went up and said that. I really wish he talked to me. Because look, did God use him the way it was supposed to be?
If you believe that was all part of some large plan, yeah, like that would hurt.
But maybe it was for her, but it wasn't. But why did it have to be? But I didn't want that plan. Or why couldn't it be someone else for that plan? Because you think I wanted to fuck? Do you think I battle with, like, why did I leave the room and that little girl didn't? It's that. I think it's a lot of anger. For valid reasons, like you brought up, of fear of like the stupidity of like actual hate and violence, and it could get worse.
The government literally targeting minority groups of people as a scapegoat.
I don't even say minority. They're attacking just people. Mm-hmm. We're people. No more minorities. No more division. They're attacking people because that's what they are. Regardless of if they're in the actual statistical. Yeah. Minority, they're attacking people.
But the minority part is why they're being targeted.
I know, but I'm just like people. Yeah. And then the whole, when you come face to face with your religious actual teachings that you preach, there's a lot going on that we need to, I know what you said, and I understand where you're coming from because of who you know in your life, who you love, and how you feel. But we gotta come together. We have to break bread.
Well, you can only have a peaceful dinner if one side puts away their weapons. Don't bring a knife to a gunfight. Actually, don't bring nothing to a gunfight unless you want to get shot, which maybe that's a too soon example, but it's sort of like, you know, I'm all for like, yeah, I'm all for unity, but like, I got to put the people I love first. And I think that's a very important, put the people I love first, really think about who you trust. And maybe when the temperature calms down, whether that happens in a year, or 20 years, or 50 years.
Or by the holiday season, which is just right around the corner.
You know, what is the Reagan saying, trust but verify?
I like the John Lennon saying more. All we are saying is just give peace a chance. Yeah. And instant karma is going to get you.
It only works if everybody plays along. The moment someone doesn't play along with peace, it all falls apart.
Yeah, because he got fucking shot 6 times in a row for his fucking beliefs. Ladies and gentlemen, with this pretty heavy episode, I would say read more still and think. I'm gonna fight for hope, as that's maybe it's just because I'm a father. Maybe it's because I've heard enough war stories. Maybe because I've heard the aftermath of war does what war does from my parents when looking at my grandfathers, what they did, one being in Korea and one fighting in Guadalcanal. Maybe I'm also too because of every fucking film I have watched in my whole life involving war, on how maybe, yeah, the good guys win at the end, but you can tell their souls are gone. And they will never look at their loved ones different, and they're the same, and their loved ones will never be able to be with them again. It's like that Born on the 4th of July with Tom Cruise. It's like The Patriot with Mel Gibson. Look at Mel Gibson. He didn't want war. He only got into it because his son was murdered, and then he brutally butchered those men in front of his sons, and then he wanted out, but because his other son got murdered, he went back at it again. And he even said at the end of that big finale when he killed Jason Isaacs' character, about, no, my son were better men. He's the protagonist, and he knows he's the villain.
In the meantime, what I'm going to do, I'm going to meet with people that I know and love, and especially those who I know are vulnerable to a lot of this big hate rhetoric. And I'm just going to let them know, like, I'm here for you. you can stay at my place if you need to. That's what I'm going
to
do.
No one's alone. That's a good thing to say. No, no one is alone.
Yeah, that was definitely a get something off our chest episode. The good news is, everybody, if you didn't enjoy that yet stuck through it for the next 2 hours, well, actually, first of all, since now that the FBI is probably going to be listening to our podcast, because, I don't know, we might be have some sort of Antifa sticker on us somewhere, I'll just say, hey, FBI, thanks for listening to us. Hope you donate to our Patreon. Hope you subscribe on whatever podcast app you're using. If you enjoy the show and want to hear more, we're always looking to grow our audience, so we thank you for that. In the meantime, we're going to take a break from a little more heavy stuff. Tom, you put a little something together for the month of October. You did a little interviewing. You touched some grass for a bit and talked to some real people with doing jobs. These people didn't want to be named directly in the podcast. So what is it we're going to call this series?
So what I have coming up, and first off, I'd like to say, because you're the one who is our producer, so you edited this new trilogy I have coming up. This episode comes out on the 30th, what we've done right now, like we've said. So I'd like to thank, first off, Travis for all the editing he has done so far and will continue to do so far. It's a lot of work. This is very analytic. You have to be very anal, really, about it, this kind of editing. So when Travis says donate to our Patreon, we joke about for food, because, you know, we like to drink and eat while we do our podcast. But really, I please would encourage people, implore them to donate and put money towards our Patreon so that Travis can hire people to make his job easier, and we can maybe then also to grow and put out more content for you. So Travis, and this is kind of ironic because I'm going to ask you to put this soundbite in right now, I want to give you a round of applause. I hope you're able to put in that Halo grunt headshot, that birthday headshot from Halo in here. Because just to give you praise, you do a lot. You're really the muscles, the skeleton, the blood, the veins. But about the trilogy, yes, I interviewed three people, and we're calling this the Blacklist trilogy. It'll be coming out in October because these people still have their careers and jobs, and for just safety and security reasons, they're only known by first name.
Yeah,
that's it. But it's a fun one. One will be about retail, one will be about fast food, and the other one will be about law enforcement. I hope you enjoy this trilogy. We're taking a break. We actually have some other interviews lined up coming up, and we'll put out soon. Take a, like I said, a break from the heavy stuff. But if the FBI and CIA, they're fighting each other right now, Travis. I don't know if you know that. So if the much more scarier ATF, because they're the ones who've gotten people killed. Yeah, no, I... Waco, study that, people. If the ATF and NSA are watching this, I'm going to do what John Oliver. I want to do what John Oliver said recently. Mm-hmm. Fuck you, make me.
Yeah.
And what I have to say to close us out, because I know we have my saying, but there's a more prominent news reporter. It's a good movie. I forget his name. I know it's kind of ironic. This kind of makes no sense saying that, but he had a good saying. And good night and good luck.
You're talking about Edward Murrow.
Yes, I'm talking about Edward Murrow. So to everyone, I say good night and good luck.
Thank you, everyone. Take care of yourselves. It's a car that's gonna get you.